groceries, they would go to their offices in the middle of war. And maybe crossing this place called Sniper's Alley, maybe a sniper bullet will kill you. Maybe a mortar shell would land in the street and you would be killed by shrapnel. And that became normalized. So there is physical danger, but the psychological harm is far greater and it's invisible. So in my day, nobody was really talking about PTSD and all of these things. The United Nations would just send us out there and, you know, no one had really begun to understand how serious psychic injury can be. Mm-hmm. Far worse than, you know, I don't know, even getting a bullet wound, if as long as it doesn't kill you, you can mend, you can heal. Mm-hmm. So the psychic injuries are lasting. And we know this, the reference that you made to the experience of our indigenous brothers and sisters, the residential schools, the generations of harm which take a long time to heal, and it takes deliberate effort to heal. You don't just end up healing. Mm-hmm. You need to, in a kind of therapeutic process, address the wounds, confront them as ugly and painful as they may be, and you need to accept and embrace them, in fact, to be able to transcend them. So in this regard, spirituality is very important. And I don't think I would have survived without spirituality, because spirituality allows us to tap into that very deep place within our soul, mm-hmm. to discover our real self, not all the superficial identities that we have in our professional or social or other contexts, the superficial selves, but the true self. So it can also be a blessing. Sometimes that suffering forces you to dig deep within yourself to understand who you really are. So just as I've seen a lot of suffering, I've also seen the astonishing resilience of the human spirit. And sometimes mediocrity is the worst death. Mm-hmm. Having an empty, meaningless life, which is what I see, frankly speaking, in our North American bubble. Mm-hmm. Emptiness, people who in this culture of materialism, instant gratification, are consuming more and more, but they're less and less happy. We have anxiety, we have depression, we have stress. So spirituality actually is very important in being able to transform your suffering into something beautiful, like the phoenix rising from the ashes. Mm. So that goes back to the sort of the no pain, no gain expression, which doesn't quite capture it so eloquently. But at the end of the day, pain is part of life. Mm-hmm. Knowing is painful. In particular, knowing that so much of what we attach our hearts to is just transient. It's dust in the wind. It means nothing. Mm-hmm. But we can either become bitter, resentful, self-destructive. The Buddhists have a saying that anger is like drinking poison to kill your enemy, right? Mm-hmm. So learning to transcend your own anger, your own trauma, is not only a profound act of self-preservation, but it's part of the process of becoming human, of realizing our true potential. And this brings me to why it is that we have evil in the world, but also we have good. We have to remember that there's good and evil. Mm-hmm. In war zones, I've seen the depths of deprivation and cruelty that human beings are capable of, but I've also seen heroic compassion and sacrifice, neighbors saving neighbors in the middle of war, and so many acts of humanity, random acts of kindness. So we have this duality, and we have to understand that we're capable both of living in this incredibly dark space, but also we're capable of shining the light and making a dark world brilliant. And the question is, how do we tap into that potential? That, I think, is an existential question, not just in a world filled with genocide and atrocities, but also in a world beset with climate change, which I will turn to shortly, because climate change is a reflection of consumer capitalism, our materialistic civilization, which tells us that progress in the pursuit of happiness is about accumulation of wealth and consuming more and more, as opposed to living in community with others, living in harmony with nature, which is why I turn very often to inspiration to our indigenous cultures and their understanding of that dimension of you're not at the center of the universe. You're part of the universe and an insignificant speck in an infinite universe. So just a couple of quick thoughts. One is, there is an expression that the Holocaust did not begin in the gas chambers. It began with words. Words that dehumanize and demonize the intended victims. Because it's a basic aspect of human empathy that we need to learn to harm others. It doesn't necessarily come natural to us. So if you look at the Holocaust, if you look at Rwanda, Yugoslavia, and all these other conflicts, they have always been preceded by incitement to hatred and violence. Getting back to what you said about radio station in Rwanda, RTLM radio, in a country where 70% of the people were living, well, were illiterate, 90% were living in rural areas. Their only source of information was the radio. This is 1994, long before the internet. So if every day over that radio, which people listen to as if it were the Bible, the gospel, you tell them the Tutsis, which were the minority, are cockroaches and they must be exterminated. Well, then you dehumanize them. You reduce them to cockroaches. The Nazis referred to the Jews as vermin, as lice. So killing them was like a delicing operation. You dehumanize them. You rationalize and normalize exterminating an entire race of people. And it may not always be that extreme, but we can also, in less extreme circumstances, we exploit others, we commit injustice, there is racism, there is economic inequity. And in every circumstance, those who are benefiting, those who are in power, will find some excuse, some way of, if you like, sanitizing unpleasant realities, inconvenient truths by saying, well, that's the way the economic system functions. Well, it's their own fault or whatever. Because indifference is the easier path. It takes effort to have empathy. It takes effort to say, why her and not me? Why should I have such a comfortable life, whereas this family cannot food on the table for their children in a world of plenty? And I would just end by saying that just as radical evil takes a lot of effort, you need to teach people to hate, you need to teach them how to be violent, you need to create a bureaucracy, a system, hand out weapons, prepare lists of those to be killed, or whatever the system is that causes this inequity, we also have the capacity for tremendous good. It gets back to the wonderful work that you're doing, inspiring people, asking questions, which force us to go outside of our comfort zone. And we typically have two conditions, none of which is particularly good. One of them is despair, where we just feel overwhelmed by all that we see in the world. We don't realize our own potential. We become depressed. We retreat into a corner. We engage in substance abuse or whatever it is to kill the pain because we don't know how to deal with the pain. Or if our life is good, we become complacent and selfish and indifferent. It's not my problem. I'm fine. My life is fine. So both of those conditions are conditions in which we fail to understand the power of our spiritual self. Getting back to what you said about Counselor Ferry, whoever this wonderful person is, bless them. And I think once again that I'm being inspired greatly by the sense of the sacred and the spiritual in indigenous cultures. And I think our mainstream so-called civilization, which is destroying the planet through climate change, literally destroying the planet, creating conditions where if we continue this way of life, we will face mass extinction and the collapse of civilization. needs now to listen to those voices of those who were once the victims of colonialism, who were discredited or dehumanized as savages, uncivilized, and all of this nonsense, the legacy of which many people around the world are dealing with as they reclaim their humanity, reclaim their identity. When I go to the UN conferences on climate change, which occur every year, it's incredible to see how people are turning to this spiritual leadership of indigenous peoples to get inspiration on how do we live in harmony with nature, which is no longer just a question of a feel-good activist who's a tree hugger, you know, because that's what the powerful people will say. Oh yeah, look at these people. They're the environmentalists and they're the troublemakers and they don't understand how the world really functions with industry and profit and progress and whatever it is. Well, guess what? That whole system is about to collapse under the weight of its own contradictions and ignorance. And in that collapse, there may be a lot of concern because the world is violent, it's confusing. But at the same time, there's a huge, immense opportunity for reimagining the world. And for having voices that have been on the margins, voices that were ignored, discredited, reduced to, you know, people who have nothing to contribute, people who need to be civilized, they need to be assimilated into our culture because their own culture has no value. Now the tables are turning. And now people are going to say, how do we live in community with each other? How do we live in harmony with nature? Because if we don't, we won't survive. We will self-destruct.
Beautiful. Okay, that was pretty heavy stuff. Yeah. I really appreciate it. I know all our listeners out there are just out of their minds right now. So we're gonna take a quick little break and we'll be right back.
Time to start my day. Whoa, 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 hold up. Oh my god, is that a new mole? I'm sure it's not a big deal, right? Everyone gets moles. I'm sure it's just a freckle. I don't think I need it checked. It can't be that serious. I don't think it's new. I'm sure if I go back into my old photos, I can find the same mole, right? Oh, it seems a little different than what I remember. I'm sure it's nothing bad.
Are you sure about that? Very few individuals are aware of steps they could take to address the common risk factors for a wide spectrum of cancers. With simple tools, about 50% of cancers could be prevented. Yet cancer prevention remains under-researched, under-applied, and underfunded. With your support, BC cancer scientists can better understand the root causes of cancer and how we can prevent it in the first place. Be the change. Donate today at www.bccancerfoundation.com.
All right, we're back, and we're just going to get an introduction of our next music from Kanavar. He's our music coordinator up here at CJSF. And please introduce your song.
Thank you so much. It's nice to be in the studio with illustrious guests and, of course, Quench. Thank you so much. This next piece was a piece that I created back in February. My partner is from northern Norway, and in her traditional Sami outfit, there's a piece of jewelry that's made out of usually sterling silver, sometimes pewter as well, and it's called a solja, which in Norwegian means sun or sun star. And I took both the large one and the small ones, which were her earrings, and recorded a few odd samples here and there, just a couple seconds of noise, and then used digital processing techniques through audio to create this entire work. So everything that you hear is made out of sounds just from that piece of jewelry.
Beautiful.
Wonderful.
Okay,
wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yes, and enjoy, everyone. Beautiful. That was special music dedicated to Dr. Akfan, and it was music that was produced by Kanwar Ashton, the music coordinator up here at CJSF. And it just was so fitting. It was just like I could imagine like my brain shuffling around and getting put back in together just by the special information and knowledge that you gifted us. It was just amazing, just so fitting. And I really enjoyed that, and I really enjoyed what you, the knowledge that you gave me, gave us. And I was very optimistic about my music selection and everything, and but your information is just so rich and so deep, and we would really enjoy to continue like getting a lot of the information that you have and being able to share it out with the rest of the world. We have listeners from all over the world, so we want to continue and be able to bring you to the program, whether it's here live or as we've done before on the radio.
Absolutely.
It would be so awesome. I believe that that's coming, and I feel it, and I just am looking forward to it. And I really appreciate yourself, Lady Fahima, and Salar, for just introducing myself and continuing on and having Dr. Akfan come here. It's just so special, so amazing, and it's astounding. So we're going to continue on with our program, and we're going to ask about your upcoming projects and the things that you're already working on right now, which the big one is climate change, and your involvement in the steps that you're working on. We'd really love to hear your words on that.
Well, climate change is arguably the most pressing issue confronting humankind. And it's an issue that is really about our collective survival as a species on planet Earth, and reigning in the excesses of our materialistic civilization, our consumerist culture, which, because of greenhouse gas emissions, has resulted in dramatic rises in temperature. Each summer now is the hottest on record. Mm-hmm. So the cumulative emissions that we have made since the Industrial Revolution, for the first time in history of humankind, have brought us to a situation where we can experience catastrophic climate change. We already have seen the early beginnings in the massive forest fires and the flooding and rising sea levels and the melting of polar ice caps and what have you. And of course, the idea of climate change first emerged in 1988 when NASA scientist Dr. James Hansen first coined the term in testimony before the U.S. Congress. I should say, though, I remember going to the Arctic in the 1980s and some of the Inuit shaman already speaking about how the Earth was changing based on their own science. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other story. But whatever it is, in 1992, the UN adopted a convention on climate change, which was supposed to be the framework within which states would largely on a voluntary basis curb their greenhouse gas emissions in order to prevent these rising temperatures. And 30 years later, we have failed to take the issue seriously. Rather, the major polluters have failed to take the issue seriously, and the climate vulnerable nations are the ones that are paying the price for the folly of others. The scientists tell us that we must keep temperature rise to within 1.5 degrees Celsius of pre-industrial temperatures by the year 2100 in order to avoid the most catastrophic harm. The scientists also tell us that currently we are set to achieve 2.8 degrees, or almost 3 degrees, twice the maximum beyond which there would be catastrophic harm. We must phase out fossil fuels. The science is very clear. In addition, we need to invest in green energy. We need to invest in carbon capture and a whole host of other measures to prevent what will be a dystopian future, to prevent handing to our children and future generations a world devastated by the excesses of our way of life, in effect. So the small island states have already been, always been the canary in the coal mine, if you like, the ones that would first experience these effects, because small islands are vulnerable. They're vulnerable to the forces of the ocean, which of course regulate the climate system. They're vulnerable to rising sea levels as a result of melting ice caps of the Antarctic and the Arctic, as a result of the thermal expansion of water as temperatures rise, and 94% of excess heat is absorbed by the ocean. It's the biggest carbon sink in the world. They are affected by extreme weather events, unprecedented frequency and ferocity of hurricanes and cyclones. And some of these islands are going to go under the water. They're going to become uninhabitable. So the small island state decided to speak truth to power. And I have been advising them on how they can begin to hold the major polluters accountable before international courts and tribunals, which, of course, is not a simple task. It's a long struggle for climate justice. It's a historical process. And the major polluters aren't so quickly going to change their behavior. But it's incredible how the smallest of islands, the smallest of nations, are rising to the greatest of challenges. One of these countries is Tuvalu in the South Pacific. You would find difficult to even find it on a map. Mm-hmm. Tuvalu has a population of 11,000 indigenous inhabitants in the middle of the Pacific. They're 3 hours flight away from the nearest other island. And they're going to lose their country in the next 20 or 30 years. And for them, it's not just about, oh, well, we can relocate to another island. Mm-hmm. These are their ancestral lands with which they have a profound spiritual connection. So for them, it's like a collective death to lose these lands. And this September, we had a historic hearing at the United Nations Tribunal for the Law of the Sea, where these indigenous leaders spoke before the tribunal, followed by the pleadings of scientific experts and lawyers. And the time has come to put an end to empty promises and to take seriously catastrophic climate change through legally binding obligations. And here, once again, our indigenous brothers and sisters teach us that the laws of nature are more powerful than our laws. The earth will go on with or without us. As the Attorney General of Vanuatu, another of the indigenous nations in the Pacific, said, if we respect nature, nature will respect us. It's as simple as that.
Beautiful.
So it is also an exciting moment full of opportunity for us to change our way of life and understand our place in the universe and to protect the earth without which none of us will exist.
Absolutely. Beautiful. Thank you so much. We really appreciate your time that you came here and just blessed us with all your knowledge that you've brought. And we can't wait to bring you back again and get some more of your knowledge. We're running out of time, so we only have like 30 seconds left. And it's just so amazing, so special. We really thank you for coming. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was a great pleasure.
Yes.
Great pleasure.
Okay. So we're going to end our program. Everyone, please come back again next Thursday, 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, and listen to our podcast. Sandra.